Well, if the information is coming out from the CPF and community leaders, they have their finger on the pulse far more than anybody else. They'll be able to know what cases have been opened and now lesser cases being opened. And, of course, with the community WhatsApp groups, et cetera, that they have access to, they'll know that there's been a drop in shootings and other related violence. So it's a good barometer when you're dealing with community-based organizations to see whether crimes have decreased and what the cause may be of that.
And do you think that the deployment of that South African National Defence Force is the main reason for this wave of calm, or are there maybe certain other things at play?
I think Operation Prosper would be the primary driving force behind calm in certain areas where the troops are deployed. Because it's force multipliers. There's more people on the ground. It means there's less opportunity for violence to break out because the opportunity of getting caught is far greater. Also, you want to keep a lower profile because there's stop and search operations taking place as well as other type of operations. The concern, as always, would be the fact that you saturate a specific area, that area calms down, the violence still continues in other areas. When you move that saturation from the one area to the next area becomes calm, and the area that you've now left once again becomes problematic. That's why I call it the Band-Aid approach. Mm. The approach of Operation Prosper and force multipliers is good, but it's a temporary solution to a massive problem that needs to be addressed.
Mm. Well, we have certain reports saying that, you know, some gangsters are still openly mocking law enforcement in certain areas, perhaps not that Muizenberg region, but with certain other areas, there's reports that killings have certainly increased. Is this operation as effective as what they would have hoped it to be?
It needs to get there, and it needs to be intelligence driven. You cannot just saturate an area and expect crime to stop, because like I mentioned previously, crime will just move to another area and move back once the saturation has moved out. What we need to take into consideration, of course, is that the gangs have a reputation that they need to uphold. So we heard of LEAP officers that were recently stoned while they were trying to arrest somebody who was regarded as having been an active shooter. We've heard of people that have made it their mission to ridicule what is taking place openly and to mock the troops that are on the ground and the police that are on the ground. But you must understand the personality and the nature of the beast. You're dealing with gangsters that need to show those around them that they don't fear these changes. Otherwise, they're going to lose that element of fear that they've created over these years. It's going to backfire eventually, and they're going to be taken into custody or killed when they engage with the troops and when they engage with the police. But the fact remains is there's a lot of ego at play when it comes to gangsterism. Mm.
And you mentioned that this is kind of like a band-aid approach. You know, you send the army into certain areas. There's this calm while they are there. And when they leave, then, you know, violence just kind of ensues again. Is there any signs that there is some sort of a long-term solution being put in place as well? You know, besides just having the presence of these soldiers in certain areas, are arrests being made, as you mentioned, are things actually data-driven and intelligence-driven?
We're hearing that there's going to be the replication of successful projects that we've seen in the past. David Africa wrote a book recently about his time in crime intelligence from the early 90s to the early 2000s when they infiltrated PAGAD and other organizations that were very active in the Cape during a very tumultuous time. And a lot of that tradecraft that crime intelligence was using then, I think, is going to come back. You need human intelligence. You need closed source information. People have become very reliant on this digital age, thinking that they can analyze a problem and solve it through whatever kind of new digital tool is on the market, be it drones, be it other types of technology. But the fact remains is nothing beats infiltration, disruption, and dismantling of crime syndicates. And it's the human factor that drives that. And sadly, we've seen how crime intelligence has been hollowed out over the years, how crime intelligence has been used to fight political battles rather than to do what their constitutional mandated job is, which is to infiltrate, dismantle, and disrupt crime syndicates. And I think with this whole change taking place, following the ad hoc committee, we're going to see their final report coming out the end of this month, Mdlunga, which is still in full force, continuing until late August, I think we're going to see crime intelligence recapacitated, and we're going to be able to see then crime intelligence driven operations to break the back of organized crime, like we saw those successes in the mid-90s to early 2000s.
But how long would that actually take?
Honestly speaking, it's not a quick fix, which is why I keep on referring to the band-aid approach. So we don't know how long Operation Prosper is going to last, and we need to have force multipliers on the ground. We need to give more power to local and provincial authorities, like the Metropolitan Police, like the Provincial Traffic Police, like the LEAP officers, giving them investigation roles, establishing more courts, and having the military in support of all law enforcement. But for us to have successful projects in place, it's going to take a minimum of 2 to 5 years to initiate those projects, to infiltrate those syndicates, and to then start seeing the results. So there's no short-term silver bullet that's going to resolve these issues.
I mean, we're roughly about 2 weeks into Operation Prosper, and it is a joint operation between the South African National Defence Force and police. We've seen the deployment of soldiers on the Cape Flats before. It's nothing new to the Cape Flats. But as you mentioned, once they leave, then things just kind of return back to the unfortunate normal. So are there proper plans being put in place now between the South African Police Force and the SANDF to ensure that once that army is removed from the area, that at least there is some plan to keep calm in these areas?
I can't see that. We don't have enough soldiers, we don't have enough police officers to be everywhere at once. You know, our police force has dropped from a high of around 200,000 to about 180,000 last year. We're now sitting with the natural attrition, the early retirement issue. We're going to be at 170,000 by the end of this year. The army as well, we've got a very aging defense force. The defense force sits at about 70,000. Most of our operationally equipped members who are of age are deployed with our foreign peacekeeping initiatives in 5 different places throughout Africa. So there aren't enough soldiers, there aren't enough police officers, which is why I talk about this concept of saturation. They'll go where the problem is, they'll resolve the problem as best they can, they'll then move to the best problem, and slowly but surely the other problem will come back. So we need to look at the long-term efforts of increasing our policing. Our local policing has been increased in numbers. The fact that the Cape Town Metropolitan has got more policing vehicles than SAPS in the Western Cape is something to look at and say, well, how do we best use these resources? Because they're not being used effectively. Law enforcement, traffic police, they're not being used effectively. They're being used in some proactive measures, in some reactive measures, but in zero investigative measures. And if you want to make a crime, a case stick against a criminal, you need to have investigators. And that's where the lack of resources is. We really need to make more use of our local and provincial authorities so that they can start filling the gap when you take the military out once they've resolved issues, so that there can be some kind of sustainability of the peace and calm.
Would this thing potentially be used as another reason? I mean, we know the city of Cape Town is trying to devolve that policing capacity to metro level. Would this be something to be used as another reason to do that?
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that needs to be looked at our next sitting of Parliament, because there's an amendment that needs to be made, and it's a very slight amendment that will give more authority to local and provincial authorities to be able to expand their powers. Because right now, their powers are limited. And if you can expand their powers, it's of benefit to SAPS. It's great having a national police force, but the fact remains is that our police force is dwindling in size. We always hear about this misnomer of 5 to 10,000 more boots on the ground every year, and there's these recruitment drives, but they don't talk about the natural attrition. They don't talk about the members that have resigned, the members that have retired, the members that have died. The fact remains is that our police force is getting smaller as our population is growing.
Well, it definitely sounds like, as you mentioned, the army is just there as somewhat of a band-aid. There's not really much of a plan for once they actually leave. You mentioned also that it might take a few years for police to come up with a proper plan to deal with this. So let's see what happens with this whole operation. But Chad, for now, we're going to have to leave with you. Thanks so much for giving your time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks so much. That was Chad Thomas, crime expert, speaking to us about the effectiveness of that Operation Prosper.